Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
You have this byplay going on between very large agricultural operations and small artisanal operations at the very same time.
That's author David Hoppe. He says large and small farms can learn a lot from each other's strengths and weaknesses. He's joined by photographer and co-author Kristen Hess to talk about their new book of profiles of farmers, producers, chefs, and hunger advocates, Food for Thought, an Indiana Harvest. Then we spend a lot of time in the kitchen cooking cruciferous vegetables. Chef Daniel Orr makes a raw Brussels sprout salad and raw cauliflower popcorn, so I guess we're not cooking those. And then he has a roasted broccoli dish that's good enough to be a main course. Stay with us. Mia Partlow reads the food news headlines for us at the top of each show. Welcome again, Mia.
The food world is abuzz over Coca-Cola's new advertising campaign in which the soda giant joins the conversation about the obesity epidemic.
For over 125 years, we've been bringing people together. Today, we'd like people to come together on something that concerns all of us, obesity.
The ad goes on to emphasize Coke's 180 low or no calorie drinks and the smaller sizes of their full calorie drinks. According to the New York Times, this is the first time the company has gone on the offensive to address criticism that sugary sodas are one of the biggest contributors to the obesity epidemic. Michelle R. Simon, a public health lawyer, says the ads should be seen as a PR campaign, saying, quote, "This is not about changing the products, but about confusing the public," unquote. A new report by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has found energy drink-related emergency room visits have doubled between 2007 and 2011. Speculations for the uptick include the increase of energy drinks on the market, as well as the growing popularity with younger adults. However, The Atlantic's James Hamblin is quick to point out that caffeine in energy drinks isn't always dramatically higher than in coffee beverages. He adds that energy drinks may not be entirely to blame for the increased ER visits. Instead, he says it's bullheaded actions bolstered by caffeine consumption that can result in hospitalization. And the global land area farmed organically has expanded more than threefold between the years of 1999 and 2010. That's according to new research conducted by the World Watch Institute. The most organic agricultural land in the world can be found in Oceania at 12.1 million hectares. But here's some perspective. Organic farmland only makes up 0.9% of all of the world's agricultural land. Read more about these stories at eartheats.org and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook by searching for Earth Eats.
Mia Partlow, always a pleasure.
See you next week.
The USDA conducts a census of agriculture to identify all active farms in the United States every 5 years. Data from the 2012 census is still being collected, so we'll look for results from that in the coming months. But the prevailing wisdom says that Indiana is in the midst of a food renaissance, with an increasing number of farmers and producers starting agribusinesses of all shapes and sizes in the Hoosier State. What's in the water in Indiana that's causing this surge?
Well, that's kind of the $64,000 question.
That's author David Hoppe. His new book, Food for Thought, an Indiana Harvest, explores why through profiles of farmers, producers, chefs, and hunger advocates from across the state. The book was commissioned by the Indiana Humanities, so their goal was to collect stories from across the entire Hoosier food spectrum. He and photographer and co-author Kristen Hess came into the Earth Eats studios to talk about their work.
I think there are a number of things happening in the state. It's not necessarily unique to Indiana because we know that food awareness, food interest, food faddism for that matter are all very hot right now. Food's a hot topic. Part of that has to do with the fact that mass media is covering food in ways that they never have before. We have a food network on television. We have celebrity chefs. But we also have a much greater interest in our own health. We're more concerned about what we're eating, what's going into the food that we eat, how that food is prepared. And also there's an increased interest in supporting local business, local entrepreneurs. And that ties into farmers markets, for example, and providing greater support for small and artisanal farmers, for example. So all of these things seem to be converging at once. I would also add one thing that's very Indiana-specific too. And as Kristen and I traveled around the state and talked to people, it was very hard for me to shake this kind of intuitive sense that at the same time that Indiana's manufacturing base was really taking a very hard hit, it was almost as though the state's economic immune system was kicking in. And suddenly we had all of this burgeoning activity happening on the agricultural front, as if somehow to compensate. It's very interesting that we have so many people now in Indiana going off on their own, starting what are really very risky ventures in many cases, but really trying to capitalize on this tremendous interest in food. And in some cases, succeeding wonderfully at it.
Well, then let's, I guess, talk more generally about our interest in food as a country. Mm-hmm. Why now?
I think there's a real interest and a desire for transparency. I don't know if it's the rise of social media and the ability for everyone to kind of generate their own media, but it seems like people are really wanting facts and they're wanting to communicate what they want. They want to embrace localism through global networks. And so I think that, you know, that's a huge component of it.
I talked to a researcher, actually, this is sort of an aside. She did research on camera phones when they first came out, and she found that people would take photos of their food. Vacations and food, that's what people would take pictures of the most and then share those on their social media platforms.
Totally. Well, right. It's really interesting. We were talking about this yesterday. Food is becoming part of the art scene in a way. People are going to dinner, for example, the way they might once have gone to a performance. They're looking for, I think, a cultural experience in many instances. And of course, one of the things that drove the book was the sense that we have to remember that food has always been a great opportunity for gathering. It's a place where we share stories. It's a place where we share memories and where we enjoy a sense of continuity in some cases. So it shouldn't be surprising that food becomes also a great focus for intense creativity and for a wonderful aesthetic as well as a nutritional experience.
It's interesting that you say that because I'm trying to remember the farmer. It's a pair of women just outside of Indianapolis, and one of them used to be an artist or still calls herself an artist. Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
She is an artist. Yeah. Kay Grimm. Yeah. And Fruit Loop Acres in Indianapolis.
Tell me about that.
Fruit Loop Acres is in a really rough neighborhood in inner city Indianapolis. And Kay and her partner, Sue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Sue Spicer have created this happening on their land in the midst of this neighborhood. It's at once an art installation, but it's also a place where they're growing all kinds of fruits and vegetables. It all blurs into one sort of happening for them. It's really interesting. Kay has been a conceptual artist around Indianapolis for many years now. And at some point, I think her antenna just led her toward food. Her creativity, you know, doesn't make a distinction between what's happening in her artwork and what's happening in her food production. So there you have it. That's a great example of someone who just doesn't see a need to make a distinction between creativity, food production, art, nutrition, you name it. It all wraps into one at Fruit Loop Acres.
And I would also add to that community. I mean, a lot of the people we interviewed for the book really had a strong emphasis in how their work is part of something bigger and how it connects to something else. So in Kay and Sue's case, it's their neighborhood. How can they, you know, help with crime or make it a more beautiful place to live? So I think that connection, that interpersonal relationship is something that definitely a trend that we also noticed.
Helping with crime, how does this particular garden or farm setup help with crime?
They believe that if it's a more beautiful place for people to live, that they'll respect the space in a different way. And they also think that if they're outside farming all day, there's more people out. There's a closer eye on the neighborhood.
Yeah, so, actually, let me see this.
Yeah.
I was flipping through this, and I got to one of my favorite producers in Indiana, Trader's Point Creamery.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I flip to the next page, and it's deep-fried Twinkies at the Indiana State Fair.
Uh-huh.
So your book covers a lot.
Well, actually, you know, if you want an interesting study in contrast, I mean, you can talk about the Trader's Point Creamery, where you have a couple who have created this business, and they are endeavoring to raise grass-fed organic cows and producing really high quality whole milk, yogurts, and other dairy products. And they have done this on an artisanal scale. They've also expanded their business, turning it into a farmer's market, a restaurant, and they're doing this within the context of the city of Indianapolis. They're right on the outskirts of the city. That's one case. We happened to interview them one morning, and then that afternoon we went up to Fair Oaks to talk to the CEO of the Fair Oaks Dairy. Now, Fair Oaks, unlike Trader's Point, is one of the larger dairy operations in the United States. It, too, has become a major destination for what's called agritourism. Fair Oaks opens itself up to the public, and you can go watch calves being birthed. You can watch some of the hundreds and hundreds of cows being milked automatically. It's a real interesting study in contrast, and yet at the same time, both of these businesses are attempting to do the same thing. Both are attempting to survive, in a sense, by making themselves destinations for the public, offering two very different experiences, but working within the same overall context, which is dairy. The interesting thing about Fair Oaks, to me at least, is that because of its very large scale, they've been able to actually take themselves off the grid. They're producing all their own energy. They have figured out a technology to be able to collect all the waste of those many, 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 many cows and turn it into energy, which powers the operation there, even provides fuel for their trucks, which carry their products down to Florida. And I find that very interesting. I mean, the reason they're doing that, the impetus for doing that, was because they wanted to be good neighbors within the context of the place where they're located, which is just south of Merrillville. You know, if they weren't as big as they are, they wouldn't be able to be doing these things with energy. And I find that really fascinating. On the other hand, I also find the taste and the quality, for example, of the products at Trader's Point, you know, incredibly appealing. It's very difficult not to be completely seduced by, you know, the experience of being at Trader's Point at sunset on a weekday evening, enjoying a farmer's market, enjoying a fresh cooked meal.
I think, too, that the reason we were able to capture such a wide spectrum is because our focus for the book was on gathering stories. And so, you know, when we were talking to people, we were more focused not on investigating their agricultural processes as much as getting to know them as people. I mean, the book was commissioned by Indiana Humanities, and so because of that, our goal was to capture human culture with relation to food. And so that's why, you know, we got the immigrant stories and the large scale ag and small and hunger advocates and, you know, the whole range. That was really important to us.
And that's something that's very important to bear in mind about what's happening in Indiana right now, too, which is that you have this byplay going on between very large agricultural operations and small artisanal operations at the very mm-hmm. same time. This creates a certain tension, without doubt. But it also hopefully provides some useful information to people. You know, one of the problems with large agricultural operations does have to do with the amount of waste that they produce, their impact on the environment, their impact on rural communities. Those are very real issues. At the same time, for the smaller producers, they're having real issues with regard to distribution, with regard to creating access to their products. It would seem that both of these players would have important things to learn from one another about sustainability, about respect for the environment, and about making products available at price points that people can afford. I think that's probably where the future of this story lies, is in trying to find some kind of reconciliation between these two seemingly opposing fields, but they nevertheless, you know, work in the same place. They are, you know, running on parallel lines. You know, clearly they both are facing challenges. So I think what makes Indiana particularly interesting right now is this diversity of activity that's taking place simultaneously.
Author David Hoppe, photographer Kristen Hess, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Learn more about Food for Thought and Indiana Harvest on our website, eartheats.org. Coming up, love them or hate them, cruciferous vegetables are on the menu.
One of the things that gives Brussels sprouts in particular a bad rap to me is that they've been overcooked.
So Chef Daniel Orr isn't going to cook them at all. He's got a recipe for raw Brussels sprout salad that will liven up any first course.
Chocolate in my alphabet soup, I don't mind those P's and Q's. Hey, I'll take another chocolate-covered Brussels sprout, how about you?
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. This is our second week of reliving some great recipes of 2012 in advance of a new batch of recipes premiering next week. Getting really excited for that. For today, I tracked down three of our tastiest recipes using cruciferous vegetables: broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and cauliflower. You might not recognize the cauliflower popcorn recipe from our radio show and podcast. That's because it aired on our sister station WTIU's local TV show, The Weekly Special. So you can go onto the website and check out the video of this dish, eartheats.org. Now, off to the kitchen we go. Here's Chef Daniel Orr.
All right, today we're talking broccoli. It's a flower, and if you would let this stay on the plant, it would actually sprout little yellow flowers on top of it. But when it gets bigger like this, it's great to cook Italian style. And a lot of people think of broccoli just as a side vegetable, you know, something that comes along with a foil-wrapped baked potato and a big chunk of meat. But in Italy, they treat it more as the star of the show. We're just going to cut this, each one of these florets, about into quarters or thirds. And we're going to blanch these off. It's where you have boiling salted water, plunge the vegetables into the water, and then you shock it by plunging them from when they're just very lightly cooked from the boiling water into ice water until they're cold all the way through. So we've got our blanched broccoli here. I'm going to take a few basil leaves, get that nice cinnamony, spicy aroma. We're going to put just a little bit of rosemary. Okay, spread that down on the bottom of the pan. Tear the leaves up just a little bit. Okay, then I'm going to lay out my blanched broccoli just kind of in one even layer so it cooks really quickly. Okay, and then I'm going to take a little olive oil, sprinkle it on top, about a tablespoon of chopped garlic on top, a little bit of my favorite lemon zest, okay, and then up under the broiler. Okay, and since the broccoli is already par-cooked, it's not going to take long. If you're doing this in the summertime and you had the grill going, you could also do this over the grill, take it out to the barbecue, and you can use that as your kind of vegetarian starter if you'd like.
Just looking for it to get a little dark on the top?
Yeah, I want it to see that little bit of caramelization, almost a touch of burning. In French, they call it ferré, which means burnt but not burnt.
And they're sweating a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Those little broccoli soldiers are they're in the heat of battle right now. Okay, so it's probably been about 2 or 3 minutes. We got that little bit of char on them. We're going to put them onto a serving platter. Okay, and then I've got some toppings. And again, this is up to you, whatever you'd like to use. I'm going to put some anchovies, good source of your omega-3s. Just kind of rip them up. A little gorgonzola cheese, Italian blue cheese, some black olives, toasted pine nuts, and a little bit of tomato. Okay, we're going to finish all that off with a little touch of extra virgin olive oil. And a good squeeze of some lemon juice. And that's our Tuscan style roasted broccoli.
One of the favorites of the cold weather season, Chef. Favorites or completely not a favorite. It's either a love or hate with Brussels sprouts.
Well, it's all those cruciferous vegetables, things like broccoli and cauliflower and the different hearty greens like collards. Those things are great cold weather foods. And if they're prepared right, they really taste great. One of the things that gives Brussels sprouts in particular a bad rap to me is that they've been overcooked. You know, grandmother used to make an X in the bottom of them and boil them until they were soft. And that's just not showing much respect to the Brussels sprouts. There's a lot of great ways that you can use them. And when done properly, they are a favorite.
We've all seen bags of frozen Brussels sprouts at the grocery store. But getting them fresh is obviously the best way to go, right?
Well, if you find them at the market and they're still on the stem, that's one of the best ways to buy them. You know that they're fresh. And they are bizarre looking. Brussels sprouts plant grows like – it looks like a cabbage for most of the year. And it gets this long stem on it with this kind of cabbage-like head on the top. And then these little tiny Brussels sprouts start popping out. And by the time harvest comes in the cold weather, they are about the size of quarters or almost as big as ping pong balls. They say that Brussels sprouts are best when they've been touched by one frost at least. So they really do like the cold weather, and they're supposed to be sweeter after the first frost.
Brussels sprouts being sweet. Boy, I never thought I'd hear that.
So we're going to do something completely different today, and we're going to do a salad with raw Brussels sprouts. What I do is I've cut them on a mandolin. A mandolin, it's something that is used a lot in France, and you could also use a knife and cut the Brussels sprouts as thinly as possible.
They're really beautiful.
Do you want to try one of these?
Love to.
Raw? I think that they almost have a little wasabi flavor in them.
They do.
And wasabi is actually, people think of it as being a horseradish root, but it's actually not. It's a member of the cabbage family.
It does have a little bit of a ping at the end there.
Mm-hmm. So we're just going to just toss these with a dressing that we're going to make right now. I've got a little bit of chopped garlic. We're going to kind of play off that little bit of heat with a little crushed red pepper. Got some scallions. Got a little bit of fresh thyme. Now, thyme is one of those herbs that's great to use in the winter. I think thyme and rosemary, they're kind of hardier. They're still out in the garden into November. A lot of times I like to plant those herbs in pots and then bring them in the house, and then I can use them throughout the wintertime. Okay, and now we're going to make the dressing by adding some olive oil, finish seasoning with the lemon juice, salt, a little bit of Parmesan cheese, and some sunflower seeds to give it a little crunch. And we've toasted the sunflower seeds.
Boy, that couldn't have been easier.
So quick, so easy. And if you get a whole big stalk, you can do this the first night, and then maybe the second night you want to cook them, steam them. And a lot of times what I like to do, especially if you have bigger ones, is to cut them in half before I cook them. And that way I can just basically blanch them, then shock them in cold water and have them around, and then just give them a quick saute to reheat them. Okay, and that's all there is to it. Let's serve it up and give it a taste. Cauliflower.
Love it.
Yeah, I love it too. A lot of people, it's kind of maligned. They don't like cauliflower. They don't like cabbage. They don't like broccoli. But I love cauliflower. And what we're going to do today, we've had a few people write in saying that they'd like some raw recipes. And this is a really healthy recipe. It'll help people stay with their New Year's resolutions, which they've probably broken by now. But we've got the head of the cauliflower, and you've got all this green on the outside. Now, a lot of people just throw this away. But you pay as much for this as you do for the cauliflower. So I like to, you know, maybe trim it up if it's got some dark edges, wash it off, and then this makes a great thing to dip with. Okay, and you can eat it. It tastes just like cauliflower, very, very healthy, and almost everybody throws it away. My mom fights over the core, and this can be, you know, trimmed up, and again, it could be used to make little coins out of it for dipping. But you also can use all of this in a cauliflower soup. Mm. You could throw some Polish sausage and some onions and some carrots and boil it up, and you have a great soup. Some little new potatoes. Okay, what we're going to do today is make cauliflower popcorn. Cut this up into little pieces, and then what we're going to do is take some nutritional yeast seasoning. Okay, this is Bragg. And it's a great gluten-free, sugar and salt-free vegetarian item that you can keep around and use as a sprinkle on on potatoes or anything like that. And it's got some really good nutritional value to it. So we'll just toss some of that in. And we'll put a little salt and pepper. Okay, and just toss it. It's simple as that. So you can sit around and boil this in front of the TV set or next to the computer screen and not feel guilty at all.
Recipes and photos for these dishes are on our website. Leave a comment to let us know what you think, eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Ahabon Binder, Sarah Gordon, Kristen Hess, David Hoppe, Liz Leslie, Chef Daniel Orr, and Mia Partlow. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Next week, new recipes. We're going to start it off right with a healthy and hearty breakfast. Be sure to come back for that. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Annie Corrigan.